Have you ever wondered how someone you admire became successful in their professional life, but also in their personal life? What does it take to become not only an outstanding leader, but an outstanding person? Welcome to Season 2 of Leaders Unplugged, a show that explores professional and personal leadership through conversations with leaders, regardless of where they are in their career. I'm Nicole Boivin. In 2015, Emily Carey, aka Sparks, became the first Canadian woman invited to the Beatbox World Championship in Berlin, Germany. And she placed second in the world and was only 18 years old. As she says during our conversation, it took discipline, a routine, and a certain amount of stubbornness to get her there. Last year, she hosted Ontario 150 and toured with Bare Naked Ladies, Our Lady Peace, and many more. She also travels with the not-for-profit Unity Charity to empower youth and women through her work. Emily is currently studying to be a teacher. Join us as she talks about her journey so far.
Emily Carey.
Hi.
What an introduction.
Thank you.
So what is beatboxing?
Beatboxing is some would say it's called vocal percussion. It's essentially creating sounds with using your sound palette in your mouth to create music, to create different sounds of percussion for a band. Beatboxing has been around for, some say, 40 years, when hip-hop originated in the 80s, 70s in New York. But then others, like myself, will argue that it's been around for thousands of years because we've been using our phonetic systems for thousands of years. And to me, beatbox is phonetics. So I came in the beatboxing scene at a really good time because it seemed that that was when, you know, Facebook videos and Instagram and YouTube was coming around. And that's what really shot the beatbox popularity level through the roof, because for the longest time, beatboxing was something that you kind of did in the streets, or you would do with your friends, or you could perform a cappella, but it wasn't as widely known as it is today, thanks to even a cappella movies like Pitch Perfect and viral videos where somebody has done something incredibly insane that even professors at MIT and Harvard have never seen in their lives.
You've been doing this for how long now, Emily?
So I've been beatboxing for about 6 years now, and I really heard it for the first time about 9 years ago. So my sister's boyfriend, Phil, his best friend is actually the best beatboxer in Canada. And so 10 years ago when he was trying to, or 9 years ago, when he was trying to impress me as the family member, you know, he was the new boyfriend, he brought me to Busker Fest in Toronto and just to watch his friend perform. As like, hey, yeah, I'm the cool boyfriend. I have cool friends who do things in the street. And he brought me to this guy named Scott Jackson, who quickly became my mentor and taught me everything I know. But at the time,
were you doing it then?
No.
How did he know you were interested? How did this come about?
I think he just thought it was something that a 12-year-old girl would think is cool.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
So he brought me there, and he was right.
Wow.
It was, and I watched him. I was mesmerized for a good hour, like I think that's how long his performance was, and I just sat on a curb and watched him, and I thought to myself, this is so cool, I need to know how to do this. And I would play around with it, and I would watch a lot of videos on YouTube for the longest time, but I never really took it seriously until I was about 15. That's when I kind of made a jump and started practicing and became a beatboxer. I think before I was just playing around with sounds in my mouth, and then I actually began beatboxing at that age.
And you went quite far with this.
Yeah.
What is it? You took second place in the World Beatbox Championships in Berlin, Germany, mm-hmm. in 2015?
Yeah, that's correct. So that was about 3 years after I started beatboxing. I was 18, and I had never competed in my life.
You're kidding.
Solo. I had done team things before, but you're in a group, and you can kind of give the authority and the power to other people.
Yeah.
It's not all on you. And
you're not so exposed.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Or vulnerable,
uh-huh.
right? And so I remember, it was in 2014, and I saw the announcement for the next World Championships, and I thought to myself, I still have a year that I could prepare for this. Maybe I'm good enough. Maybe I can do it. And at the time, I was just beatboxing, like, in my bedroom. I think I did...
You mean you weren't even doing nationals or regionals or anything like
that? No.
Why not go straight to the world? I like your style.
Why can't you just go right into the Olympics? If you think you'll win gold, why not? But that's the thing. I didn't think I would win gold. I just wanted to make top 8 in the world, which is, like, to me, still an accomplishment. I still see people doing that today. I'm like, even if you make top 10 in the world, that's...
No kidding.
Right, that's amazing. And so I decided to do it, and I went up to my mom, and it was not an easy bargain at first, but...
What were her concerns?
Just me traveling to Europe alone. I'm still, like, her baby.
Yeah.
So I'm the baby of the family. And so... It was more so traveling alone, but I kind of worded it in a sense that I was invited.
Is this breaking news there for your mom and when she hears this?
I'm not sure. I've told her a lot of things, though, that I've done in the past.
Okay.
Maybe it's not news, but I said I was invited when really I emailed the organizer and I said, hey, there's no Canadian woman in the female category. Can I fix this, basically? And just asking, I know I haven't qualified in any way. I know you've never heard of me before, but there's no female from Canada in that category. So can I compete?
Just out of the blue.
Just out of the blue, because I really wanted to. And I wanted to be the first woman from Canada to bring that legacy there. And sure enough, there was it happened last weekend, the World Championships. I wasn't there, and we may get into that later.
Yeah.
But there was another woman from Canada. So it kind of started a chain, which is what I was hoping for. And on that note, like, I didn't know if he would say yes or no, but I did know that they needed more women to compete. There's over 150 men that compete usually, and then there's around 20 to 30 women.
Okay.
So I knew that he would probably say yes to me, and sure enough, he did. And then it was just telling my mom, hey, Mom, so can I go to Europe all alone? I was invited.
Uh-huh. And let's not forget that.
Yeah, and let's not forget that. And it was a really, looking back, it's crazy to think that it feels so long ago because I've grown so much since then. But the ambition was there, right? The craving of I want this so bad. And it wasn't the placing first, second, third that I wanted so bad. It was the legacy. I wanted to break that wall for women from Canada because we're just not very well known, let alone being a female competing in beatboxing. So I really just wanted to break that wall and hopefully open it up for other women in the future, which I think that was the effect that it had.
And you smashed that wall.
I smashed that. I think kicked it down with my right foot. And it was a lot of practicing, though. It was not easy. I was on average practicing about 4 hours a day, and I was in school and working part-time. And I would, if I had like an 8:30 a.m. class, I would wake up around 6 to practice for like an hour or two. And then I would go to school. And then between work, I had about an hour, so I would continue practicing. And you can bring it wherever you want, right?
Yes.
So I would walk in the street and keep doing it. And then if I got home around 9 or 10 after work, I would do it for another hour until my sister or mom would tell me to stop. And I think that's what really made it. A lot of people talk about routine and the value of having this type of consistency in your life. Mm-hmm. And when I was preparing, that's all I needed to get me where I was, where I went. Because if I hadn't practiced as hard as I did, but also had that routine and discipline, I wouldn't have made it as far as I did. I think skill had a lot to do with it. Of course. But that skill wouldn't have been developed otherwise.
So it takes a lot of discipline, as you said. So you won the championship. What happened after that?
A lot happened after that. I would say, I always kind of put it that year was 2015, and that was the best yet worst year of my life.
Ooh,
and not, and that's not to in a negative way or anything. I think the best outweighs, definitely. But what came after was something that I wasn't prepared for. So after winning second place, you know, coming from Sudbury, that was a very big deal. And even just coming from Canada, that was a very big deal, because there was no other, even in the men's or the tag team or cruise category, no one from Canada had ever made it that far in the World Championships. So it was a huge honor that I had on my back coming back home. And I think that I had rushed so much to the idea that I would make top eight and it would go really well. And when I came back, I would practice for the next one to win.
The year after? That's it?
It's every 3 years.
It's every 3 years.
So
okay.
The one that just passed.
Okay.
And I had that in my head, that when everything kind of happened all at once, I didn't really know how to present myself or how to speak about myself. And I feel like at that age, you're very vulnerable. 18 years old is a lot is changing. And that was also the year I moved from Sudbury to Toronto.
Mm.
And I began getting a lot of interviews. So radio interviews, TV interviews.
Mm-hmm.
And there wasn't anybody really behind the scenes saying,
coaching
me, right? So that's where the kind of like worst part can almost come in, because the amount of, the amount of interviews and just media attention that I was gathering kind of made me always be in that persona of a beatboxer and a performer and talk about it all the time. And I think this applies to any type of artist and anybody that's really committed and dedicated to something they're doing, not even just artists. You could be a tradesman and this happens,
mm-hmm.
that it consumes you so much and you kind of neglect the rest of you. Right? And that's something that I can say happened now, but I wouldn't have been able to tell that back then. So that's where I can say now that was the best and worst year, because it was the best because I don't regret anything. And I love everything that happened, and it has led me to where I am today, and it has led me to where I will be in 10 years. But I think there's something to say about being that young with that much attention and not being prepared for it,
mm-hmm.
and neglecting or forgetting to reflect on who you are,
mm-hmm.
neglecting the rest of you, you know, the comforts, the cares, who you are, it'll really take a toll on you.
So what happened? What was a trigger for you to realize that maybe things were not balanced as they should be for you?
I'm not sure if it was if it was an instant thing.
Yeah.
I think it was a progressive. I began missing things. I think that's what it was. I began missing having conversations with people. I began telling when friends would take me out to a party or meet new people, I began saying, don't tell them I'm a beatboxer, because I really missed having those personal connections with people. Whereas, you know, if you're, you know, a celebrity, or if you have this really cool thing behind you and people learn that about you first, that's all they want to talk about.
Yeah.
And I was just tired of talking about it. So I would say, don't tell them I'm a beatboxer, because I want to talk about other things. And that's when I realized it had been so long since somebody just looked at me for me. And so I started even going by Emily again. I was like,
Never
mind Sparks, right? So I still use that when I teach and when I perform, because I would rather people not... then I'm turning on the persona now.
Yeah.
But that was... At that time, I just needed to be Emily for a while. And I surrounded myself with the right people, luckily, and just started something so simple. Like, I started reading again. I didn't realize that I neglected reading for so long. And if you knew me when I was younger, I always had a book in my hands. But then when all of that happened, I was just beatboxing all the time or making videos for it or planning out my persona performer, like social media and or on an interview. And it was just so consumed by this Sparks character that I never took the time for myself anymore. And that's so crucial. And I feel like a lot of artists go through that when they're just very consumed by their persona, and you reach a point where you miss what you had beforehand. Last summer when I did the Ontario 150 tour, and I hosted, but my host name was Emily Carey. And that changed a lot of things. It sounds crazy to say, but somebody introducing me on stage as Emily Carey rather than Sparks changed a lot for me. And that was the most fulfilling experience. That whole last summer, I got to tour with Bare Naked Ladies and Carl Wolf and all these cool bands. And I felt so blessed, and I felt so myself. Very different from when I performed beforehand. And I was still beatboxing, but I was also emceeing, so I could talk a lot more, and the crowd and I connected on a different level. They saw me as a person.
You were bringing in Emily.
Yeah.
And Sparks. It was like a reconciliation.
Mm-hmm. And that was after so long of there not really being much reconciliation.
Yeah, yeah.
That was last year, so 2017. So 2016 was the year of the blank year.
Uh-huh.
That I like to call it. I have 2015, the best and worst year. 2016, the blank year. 2017, rejuvenation. 2018, present. And
what does that mean, present?
It means a lot of really good things. So after I toured last summer, when that ended, I felt that kick again, that joy of I love being in front of crowds. I love making people happy. That's the reason I perform, right? And I perform to inspire. When a woman or a child comes up to me after a show, if that happens and they're like, thank you so much, or you were so great, or even a kid gives me a high five and they loved me, that to me is all I need, that I did a good job. Mm-hmm. I don't need a standing ovation or an encore or anything like that. My heart is really with youth, and a little, like when a little girl comes up to you and is just like, you see the stars in her eyes, nothing tops that. And so after that ended in September, I started teaching a lot again. So I teach beatboxing. And I have been for 3 years, but not as seriously. And I began doing shows a little differently with Unity Charity. And they're an incredible organization for youth and hip-hop, and making... They basically go to marginalized communities or underserved communities and show that hip-hop can be a form of expression and give you leadership skills.
Yes.
And so working with an organization like that and teaching youth, it was so good for my own personal development, because then I was able to take my own art form and really connect it with leadership and personal skills. And ever since then, I've just had this craving to teach. I'm very excited for the next chapter.
And what is that? Is that teaching?
Yeah.
Are you in school for teaching?
So I'm going back, and I'm going to finish my teaching degree, and then I'm also going to do social work courses on the side.
Oh.
Because I need fulfilling work, and I've seen now that I can really change people with something that I also love, which is music and arts. And arts therapy is incredible. The work that it does for students, for adults, for everyone. There's a lot of healing properties through art and through the telling of one story. And if there's anything I can do to kind of, you know, strengthen those lines with especially marginalized communities in Canada, I will do it. And so that's the next chapter. which I'm very excited about. I don't really, can't say I know much about where it's going. I'm just doing the steps that will help me be the best at that. But yeah, it's very exciting.
What advice would you have for young women that are just trying to figure it out?
Oh, that's a good question. Because I'm one of them.
Okay.
I think there's a lot of people when you're young that will try and tell you their thoughts on how they think your life should be. And that's a common theme throughout the world, throughout different cultures, throughout different religions, throughout the world. We will see young women being told what their life should be. And even growing up, like, it wasn't ideal for my parents to think of me pursuing a path in beatboxing. But I did it anyways. It was short-lived just to be in a path of beatboxing, but it led me to where I'm now going.
Mm-hmm.
And I could have, you know, just graduated high school and become a teacher too. I wanted to do that as well. But I didn't. I would go with my gut. And there were a lot of people saying, you should do it this way, you should do this. And I'm a bit stubborn.
You have to.
And one thing that I've learned through that is the importance of being selfish. Of you, what you do is not, if you are not hurting anybody in what you're doing, you are not affecting their life. Everyone will have a say or want a say or a piece of what direction you're going into. But if you are not selfish, you're not doing justice to yourself. You need to be selfish. You need to be stubborn. You need to follow what you think is right and have and back it up, though. Don't go crazy. Don't be stupid. Being smart on a professional level is so key and so important because it changes your career. And I know that's speaking in an artist perspective, but it goes across all types of careers or paths in life. If you want to be a nomad and travel the world, know where you'll sleep at night. If you know you want to be the VP at a bank one day, know the steps to get there and meet the right people and work the right way to get there, because you can do it.
You're a living example of that. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Emily certainly embodies the slogan, just do it. She has followed her gut, but as she says, you also need to be smart about it. She seems to be in a great place, having reconciled her two worlds as the performer Sparks and the woman, Emily. Her plans for the future are inspiring. I wish her the best. I hope that you enjoyed this podcast. And if you want to listen to more conversations like this one, look for Leaders Unplugged at iTunes or Google Play. I also want to thank our producer, Josie Guimond, and our editor, Graham Harris. Until next time.